Welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Bombercast post round 15 edition. Welcome to my regular co-host Bonta, long time no speak. Post a win against the Eagles, always good to come back on a high.
Yeah, it has been a while since we've been gone. We obviously had the loss to Carlton, then we managed to get over the bye, which was always nice. And then, yeah, the 5-goal win on Sunday, which to me, Grizz, felt a little bit easier than probably the scoreline suggested at times. I never really felt like the Eagles were going to challenge us and run over us, even though they probably got to within 10 points half a dozen times during the game.
Yeah, I probably felt the opposite. I thought it's funny, like these sorts of games always have that effect that I felt like it was a lot closer than 30 points for most of it. And that's because really there was only one point which we kicked away at the end. But we have a habit of not being able to put these types of teams away, and we couldn't on the weekend. But we didn't lose, which I suppose when you look at some of the other results we've seen the last few weeks, and you saw how close North got to Collingwood, and you saw, you know, Melbourne lose by 94 to Fremantle. There have been some weird results. I suppose just coming away with a 5-goal win is pretty good.
Yeah, you're right. It's been a bizarre few weeks. It's been a bizarre season, really. Let's be honest. There's been some ups and downs. Interestingly, Grizz, I saw a graphic today that showed the ladder from the opening round to round 8 and then from round 9 until now. We were actually 7th from zero from opening round to 8th, and then we've been the sixth best team from round 9 to now, which of course equals 3rd on the ladder. So we've been probably one of the more consistent teams. I think us, Carlton and Sydney are the only teams that are basically in the same spot as they were for opening round to round 8 and round 9 to now.
Yeah, well, I suppose we've had a pretty consistent season. Like outside the Port Adelaide game, all of our margins, win or loss, have sort of been either 5 goals up or 5 goals down. You know, Port Adelaide lost on, I think it was Gather Round aside, where we got absolutely belted off the park. And that result, by the week, looks more and more anomalous, to be honest, because Port aren't going great and we tend to just keep on going that plateau. But I was looking at this the other day. I thought our percentage of 102 wasn't great. But then I looked at the top 8 and outside of Sydney, who are rocketing at 148%, everyone's sort of in between that 107 to 100 mark on percentage who are in the top 8 currently. I think Carlton's a little higher as well. And then just outside that, the Western Bulldogs are a very high percentage. But otherwise, it's a really weirdly even year, and the percentage of the league sort of puts it in, you know, at least amongst the top 10 or 12 teams, puts that sort of lens on it that you're only a couple of bad quarters away from losing to just about anyone.
Yeah, just on percentages, the only ones we have to worry about are Fremantle, who unfortunately do have 10% on us, and then Brisbane, who are 2 games behind, they have 20% on us. So you're right in saying that our percentage, when you compare it to probably league-wide, isn't that bad, but unfortunately, when you compare it to our contemporaries who have had a draw, it tends to stick out a little bit. So.
Isn't Fremantle just a weird team? Like, I swear, like, 5 weeks ago, Justin Longmuir, not John Longmuir, he's not close to getting sacked, but Justin Longmuir was in the gun and everyone was worried about it. And all of a sudden, like you said, they're at 100 and something, they're at 112%. They're just shy of the top 4. It's been a really strange year like that. The Giants are struggling, and it just sort of puts for me the result on the weekend into focus in that, you sort of just, if you can get a 5-goal win against anyone, you've just sort of got to take it. And West Coast, over the last couple of years, even though they haven't been great, have given us some troubles. I think both our games last year went down to the wire. The one earlier this year went down to the wire. I don't know what it is about that team, but they seem to have stylistically got us covered, I think, the last couple of years. But it was pleasing to, you know, I suppose, overcome the flow of the game at different points to win. And I say flow of the game in the sense that for what has essentially been the 4th week out of 5, we were absolutely belted at clearances. They threw Liam Ryan in there. They were missing Tim Kelly. They were missing Harley Reid. They were missing a bunch of stud midfielders, which you would have thought would let us get on top, but it didn't. And it was sort of bizarre that it was Liam Ryan and Elliot Yeo or bust. And, you know, we lost 35 to 44 in total clearances. The big loss for stoppage clearances around 19 to 29. But you look at Carlton, we lost clearances 33 to 39. Gold Coast, I think we won by one clearance. Richmond, who never been a good clearance side. We lost the clearance to 31-41, and North all the way, you know, 5 games ago, we lost 28-42. So in the last 5 games, what was essentially our one wood to start the season, which was our stoppages and our ability to score from stoppage, has sort of fallen away. And we're able to overcome that, you know, sort of through general stop contested possession and our ability to score on transition. But it was just sort of a weird game overall, I thought.
Yeah, I think our problem against West Coast is the same that it's been for the last 10 years, and that's Jeremy McGovern and co. I mean, there was used to be Shannon Hearn and Jeremy McGovern. Now it's Tom Barras and Jeremy McGovern. For whatever reason, our players and the commentators said it multiple. Now, I'll be honest, I actually watched the game without commentary. I watched it on mute, and it was actually quite pleasant. But I have seen the replay since, and the commentators made mention of it a couple of times that, you know, the way to play West Coast is not to just long bomb into the forward line. And we did it all those years ago when we went over there. Well, not that long ago, I guess, but when we went over for that elimination final, they absolutely pantsed us. And I said before that game, the one thing I didn't want to see was us just long bombing to their tall intercept marking defenders all night. And I said the same thing going into the game on Sunday, was I just don't want to see this long bomb because they'll just cherry pick us all day long. And it's exactly what happened again and again and again and again and again. So that to me is pretty poor, that, you know, different coaching staff, different playing group, different whatever else, but yet we're still doing the same things that clearly don't work against West Coast, because that's been their strength for a long time, has been their tall intercept marking defenders. And they've changed personnel, but they've kept that strength.
Yeah, you would have thought Tom Barras was wearing an Essendon jumper halfway through the third quarter. It looks like we're looking for him, didn't it? Every time it was going inside 450. And they've always been an intercept team, even when they won the premiership in 2018. It was that Weagle's web that, you know, Jared Healy famously coined, that they sort of set their entire game off intercept and sort of full went the clearances in. And it was interesting because whenever we did lower our eyes in transition, we did score. And Peter Wright didn't have a dirty day, but he had that horrific non-mark call early, and it just looked like all confidence and momentum he was building sort of just got sapped from him in that perspective. Kyle Langford was pretty well held, except for the first goal, and I think a goal late in the fourth quarter. But the guy I think we should talk about primarily, and we'll talk about a couple guys individually before we move on to this week's game, but Jackie Stringer, 5 goals. You made contract the bold year. Prediction. Yeah, contract year, Jake Stringer. You made the bold prediction at the start of the year that you said that Jake Stringer will lead goal kicking and Kyle Langford will be our best and fairest. Well, at the moment, I think you might be close.
I don't know about Langford. I think Kyle has been, I think he's been disappointing since that. I honestly expect that come the end of the year, we're going to get a message from the club that Kyle's gone in for some clean up on that hip, because I think he's still struggling. Yeah. I don't think his mobility around the ground is anywhere near. I mean, Eath Dog pointed out, you know, his pressure is just not there at the moment, and that's not because of Kyle as a player, because as you know, and as we all know, Langford does work hard the other way. I just think at the moment his body won't let him.
I think he looks like he's laboring basically as a lead out full forward, as opposed to that really dangerous medium type that could take both talls and smalls out of their comfort zone. But Jakey Stringer kicked 5, and they were 5 pretty important goals, and in the sense that whenever it felt like West Coast were getting on top of us, he would kick a snag. He had 20 disposals, 5 clearances, 10 marks. It's that quintessential Jake Stringer game. You made the comment, contract year Jake Stringer, which unfortunately rings a bit true, but he's certainly been good this year. I think if he's not leading our goal kicking, he's very close to Kyle, and having those two as medium size full forward is causing some real havoc for defenders.
Yeah, he certainly does cause the trouble. But I think somebody said it on the weekend again on the replay when I was watching, that, you know, at his best, he's the best player in the league. I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think at his best, he's the best player in the league. He was at one point at his best. He could be the best player in the league. He never did it for a consistent period, obviously, but that back end year where he more or less dragged us into the finals with his clearance work was peak Jake Stringer for us as a midfielder. But now as a forward, I think we're seeing what he did a lot of the time when he was at the Bulldogs. And yeah, I'll be interested to see how it goes for the whole year, because he does have this ability, like we saw on Sunday, to turn up in bag five, but he does also go missing at times. So, you know, I'm probably not looking so much for five goals every week from Jakey or a miracle every week from Jakey, but, you know, just one or two goals for the rest, average for the rest of the year, I think would suit us to a T.
Yeah, and it helps when he's got, you know, Nate Caddy kicking goals and Kyle Langford. Yeah, and Kyle Langford and Peter Wright both kicked two as well. So I think we've got a pretty even contribution amongst our forward line, which is good. But I thought, you know, I mentioned before we got belted in the clearances, but I think all in all, our midfield around the ground did really well. So despite the fact we lost the clearances 35-44, I think we broke even on contested possession, which sort of just shows that we were winning the ball around the ground as we needed to, or intercepting when needed. But Sammy Durham just stepped up again, game high, 29 disposals. He had five clearances, kicked a crucial goal in the fourth quarter, when West Coast were coming. And a couple efforts for him just to body line the ball out of clearance and knock it forward. I think Matt Guelfi kicked the goal after he had about four efforts streaming out of the centre square. He's fastly becoming, well, he's already cult hero, but he's fastly becoming probably our second most important mid behind Zach Merritt at this point.
Yeah, no, he is. That's a fair comment. There's probably two players I think running behind Zach at the moment. That's Caldwell and Durham. So yeah, it's I'm not sure how you split those grids. Caldwell, what do you have? 11 tackles on the weekend, which is just insanity, and then Durham's attacks are just also incredibly strong. So it's hard to split those two, I think. But I think that it's a good problem for us to have, because it's not a problem we've had for a very long time, I think, where you've got multiple guys competing for that, you know, second rung behind Zach.
Yeah, and well, we've always had, you know, guys like Parrish and Shield, but I think the difference, and I'm still a big proponent of Parrish, and I think the fact that we're losing clearances consistently, we could really use him in there at the expense of, you know, maybe some of Perkins or the Jade Gresham centre bounces when he's in the team. And that's not a knock on Perkins. It's just I think he's better as a high half forward pushing up to the stoppage as opposed to a pure clearance player. But the thing that Durham and Caudle both have is a defensive side. And, you know, the commentator said at one point that it looked like Jai Caldwell and Elio were going to leave their footy jumpers on the ground and just go 12 rounds in a ring. Every time one was near the ball, the other one was there. They were sort of tagging each other, but also going for the footy, and a couple of tough hombres there.
Caldwell's actually a former, he definitely won a state championship as a boxer. I'm not sure if he won a national title, but yeah, one of the few footy players who could probably back himself up in a ring.
Yeah, probably. And I my view on Caldwell is I think he's a very good player. I think he's a bit of a dump kicker at points, and he can butcher the ball just as poorly, say, an Andy McGrath does at times. And I think Andy probably gets more shtick than Jai does. And that's probably just because when you're coming out of defence and you turn it over, it just looks worse than when you're going inside 15, turn it over. But I think him and Durham, having two guys that can both do defensive jobs but also hunt the football, is just such a really important mix to have in your midfield when you do have your ball hunters like your Zach Merritt and when your Darcy Parrish when he's in the team. And it's amazing that they feel that they can drop Will Setterfield to the VFL, who is normally that defensive, accountable, big body type, because you've got those two there. And it just creates all sorts of, I suppose, flexibility in how you pick your team.
No, just on, I think we should probably look towards this weekend, but just on Setterfield before we move forward, if Setterfield breaks down again this year, do you give him another contract?
It would be one of those ones of we wait till after the trade period. You know how some guys go, look, we've got a few priorities in trade period, and if, you know, things go to plan, then there may not be a spot for you. But if they don't, then we're happy to have you back on a one-year rookie deal or something. I think that if he breaks down again, that's probably where I would have him, just because he's only been here for 18 months, 2 years, but he's had, what, three or four significant sort of soft tissue injuries?
Over his career, yeah. I mean,
Oh, just in his time here, like he had that big injury last year where he missed a significant amount of time. I reckon it was the Brisbane game around 8. He had another one started this year, had an interrupted preseason. He had injuries galore at GWS and Carlton. At some point, you've got to pull the pin, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a lot of us were filthy when he went to Carlton instead of us the first time around. And then there was a little bit of a, oh, well, that's okay. He went there because he was permanently injured at Carlton. So it's not a new thing. And it's tough because I think when he's fully fit and firing, I think that he's definitely got a spot in our side. But, yeah, the reality is for me is, and again, I refer to Heathdog because I think he's been mentioning it a lot, but you can't just keep handing out contracts to blokes whose bodies just clearly aren't up to it. And a tougher conversation about that, and it's one we may have another night. We won't do it this episode. We'll have to be had around Zach Reed in that regard too, because for all his talent in the world, he's made a crepe paper. So, you know, he's got Scott Gumbleton Mark II written all over him for me. But we will look forward to this weekend's game, Grizz, and it's a big one for me. I know Geelong aren't in really any great form, but they have had our measure for so. We beat them in 2018, you know, whatever. But over the years, they have had our measure just so often and so easily. So it's, to me, a big mental step for this group to try and beat Geelong. And I don't care if it's a smashing or if it's a close game and we win. I think it's just a big mental step for them this Saturday night.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So my view on this one is if you're going to get Geelong, it's going to be this week. And if you don't get Geelong, then it's probably a barometer where you're at, to be honest. So I think...
Danger's playing, by the way. Not sure if you've seen that news, but Dangerfield did get off at the tribunal tonight.
He got off on the tribunal, did he?
Yes, okay, he did. Which, just as a side note, can't believe Mason Redmond did not get looked at all for his tackle. The way they've dealt out punishments for sling tackles this year and tackles that looked exactly like Mason's, the fact it didn't even get any comments from the match review officer just left me dumbfounded. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the sling tackle this year, because you're right, it has, like, I remember last year they were so hot on it, and I don't know whether we're just seeing less of them now, but there seems to be more variation. What I don't get is the punches to the face, the ones that were meant to be for slips high to weak. You saw Zach Butters get off.
Maybe that's why Redmond got off this time round, because they dished him out on rule of the week. We stuck him earlier in the year. We can't stick the poor bastard again, because Redmond's tackle is no different to what Jones got reported for or got suspended for mine. So, yeah, you know, maybe you've stumbled onto something there, Grizz.
Yeah, well, apparently, yeah. If
we do love a good conspiracy theory.
Well, you know, I just... Mason Redmond, week one, gets suspended. Jesse Hogan punches someone in the face a month ago. Nah, all good. And then Zach Butters 2 weeks ago. Nah, all good. So I don't get it. But regardless, this week against Geelong, if you're gonna get Geelong, it has to be this week. No Tom Hawkins, who has historically absolutely killed us. They're down on form. They're playing Mark Blitzavs and Sam DeConing in the ruck. My view is if we're going to win this game, we've got to get back to clearance dominance. And I think we need to bring in a Shield or a Setterfield to reinforce that stoppage and that clearance dominance that we had at the start of the year to balance out our midfield. I think Perkins needs to go back to a wing and a half forward where he seems to play his best football. And if Sammy Draper is to have the game that we've been waiting for, it's this week, because there is no reason he shouldn't be absolutely dominating, you know, Sam DeConing in the ruck, to be honest. You know, I think it's about time.
Sam DeConing's not his brother, is he? Who at the moment, for mine, is probably in all Australian form, very close
to Grundy. Well, you saw what Tom DeConing did to him, right? And so my view is, you know, Sammy's 26 now. He's got Jones, you know, playing on the wing, chopping him out so he doesn't have to be down the line so much and saving him petrol tickets. I want to see Sammy Draper absolutely tear this game apart from the ruck.
I don't think so. Just back on the original point, I don't think Shield comes in. But whatever reason, it just seems like Dylan's happy to run around in the twos collecting kicks, and we'll probably trade him for a fourth rounder somewhere at the end of this year. So I think he's still got at least two or three seasons in him based on who he is and how he prepares for the game. But it just won't be with us. Setterfield, yeah, you're right. We probably do have to bring in him. No, Hawkins, yeah, traditionally he does dominate us, but to be honest, he's a shadow of himself, isn't he? So I kind of wouldn't have minded seeing him this week because I think we could have really exposed him. And it's fighting with a bit of fire there to say that against Tom Hawkins if you're an Essendon fan because, you know, he has destroyed us so often. And then obviously the other forwards they've got down there in Cameron, I think will still give us some trouble. And obviously Stengel will want to impress for his new club. So no doubt he'll put on a pretty good performance on Saturday night too.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want Stengel, but I think that's probably an unpopular opinion.
I only want Stengel because Davey, Wanganeen, and whoever else you want as your small forwards haven't really stepped up this year the way we'd like to. So Guelphy's a good small forward, but he's not really a crummer. That's definitely something we're missing in our forward line. Although, yep. You know, if we play the Eagles every week, we're just going to bomb it long to the tall defenders and there won't be any crumbs for Stengel anyway.
Speaking of Guelphy, he's going to have probably the most important matchup in our forward 50 this week, which is on Tom Stewart. He tends to do that. He did the job on Sicily. He was on McGovern at different points, which was a really weird matchup. But he was sort of he's got a knack for playing that sort of tagging forward pocket role, and you'd think he'd go to Tom Stewart. And because teams have shown if you can stop Tom Stewart from intercepting and getting involved in their transition play, it can really halt how they move the ball. And so I'd expect Guelphy to go there. I'd expect to bring Setterfield in, maybe probably for Cox if Cox's knee doesn't get up. And I'm with you. I don't care what the margin is. We just have to win. Because if we win this and when we beat Melbourne, I think we're just about top six locked. When you look at the rest of the draw for the year after that. So really big couple of weeks coming up. And, yeah, so, Bont, what's your tip and what's your bold prediction for this week?
I think we'll win. I don't know by how much. I'll say 5 goals. Bold tip. Is it a bold tip to say that I think Laverde will continue his second half good form? I don't think he was very good in the first half against the Eagles, but he was very good in the second half against the Eagles. And he will keep Jeremy Cameron to 0 goals.
Ooh, that's a big call. He's a fascinating matchup for Jeremy Cameron because you really do need someone that can go up and back with Cameron. I wonder if Redmond's dead, but that's, you know, because he
goes up the ground. But I think close to the goal it'll be Jaden. And I would just like to point out that Jaden absolutely proved how fickle people can be because I think for most of the year, people have been calling for his head, and then he had one good half against West Coast, and all of a sudden I'm reading a lot of, geez, he's put a good season together. Geez, he's been well good this year, and I'm sitting here going, you blokes are calling for his head. But anyway, that's just another rant. What's your prediction, mate?
Yeah, my view on, just quickly on Laverty, is it's never as good or as bad as it seems with Jaden. His bad games are never as bad as people say. His good games are never quite as excellent as they say. He's a solid foot soldier. Him and Heppel have shown that with a bit of pressure on the ball coming in, they're actually fine, even at this stage in their careers. My prediction is a 5-point Essendon win, and I think that, well, I'll go with my hope, which is I think Sammy Draper's best on ground. That's my prediction, and I really hope it's true, because if he does and he can turn into that ruckman that we need him to be, I think the scope of our midfield just improves greatly. But, Bont, it's been great to see you again. And for those listening, we have been missing for a while. Despite the quality of the production, you may not know, we're not professionals in the sense that this isn't our day job. We try and fit it in every week, but it's been hard. But we're hoping to be back every week until the end of the season. But, Bont, thanks for joining me again today.
Always good to catch up.
No worries. And as always, guys, make sure you like, subscribe, and tell your Essendon supporting mates to have a listen. And as always, go Bombers.